Welcome to the Movie Planet, Season 4, Episode 1. This week we are talking 2001's I Am Sam. With Joe.
They shared with us that your records show that your intellectual capacity is around that of a 7-year-old.
JC.
Did you hear that?
And Joel.
Your Honor, my client is understandably upset. Motion to recess.
Yeah, I don't exactly like recess very much.
I'm your host, Joe, and with me is the Sam and Lucy to my Rita, JC and Joel. Okay, this week, JC is nominated I Am Sam for the Pantheon of Drama Movies. Now, the Drama Movie Pantheon is comprised of 7 and only 7 films. Currently, the films with their average grades are as such. Number 1, Whiplash with an A-, an 11.667 out of 12. Number 2, Lost in Translation with an A-, which was a solid 11 out of 12. And number 3, Castaway with a B+, a 10.667 out of 12. So no matter what, this movie's getting in the Pantheon.
Yay! Congratulations, I Am Sam.
The higher the grade we give it, the longer it may be staying there. Only a film with a higher grade can kick it out on its ass from the Pantheon in the future. So we will discuss the movie, and in an hour or so, we will analyze and grade it and figure out if we need to boot a movie out. And in this case, we will not have to.
Not today.
Although, if you've noticed in the horror films, we have had to.
Yeah, they're horror films.
Oh, yeah.
I have not noticed at all.
And the Star Wars films, we had another movie booted out of it.
Yeah, Attack of the Clones, and then what else was booted out?
Star Wars, A New Hope.
Wow, the granddaddy of
me.
It got booted out.
That's sad. Understandable.
Wasn't my
vote. Sad.
Wasn't my votes.
Let's be honest. It got booted out by a numbers game because they're all like between a B- and a B+.
See, it's all your fault, Joel.
Well, this is a spoiler-rich podcast, so if you haven't seen I Am Sam, it's best if you stop right here, watch the movie, and then turn us back on to enjoy our discussion and analysis. But now that we've handled that business, let's get to our movie of the week.
And you guess her name is Rita Harrison.
Lovely Rita Meterman?
Yeah, and Harrison like George.
Is she going to help us?
She can't help us, but if she ever finds her friend's number, who does this kind of cases, she's gonna call. She's gonna call me. You've grown.
I?
Yeah. Because your ears are bigger and your eyes are older. Oh, because guess what I'm gonna get when I get my next paycheck? I'm gonna get an answering machine, because then you can call and leave a message. You can say, hi, this is Lucy.
Can't afford an answering machine.
Yeah, because I'm gonna get a promotion, a big promotion. A promotion is big.
They're gonna let you make coffee?
Always, because always set your dreams high, Lucy.
I'm sorry, Daddy. It was all my fault.
No, don't say that. No, because it was not all your fault, so don't say that.
I wouldn't want any daddy but you. Did you hear that? I said I was sorry. I said I didn't want any daddy but him. Why don't you write that down?
This week, we are talking about 2001's I Am Sam, a rated PG-13 movie. Directed by Jesse Nelson, written by Christine Johnson and Jesse Nelson. Starring Sean Penn as Sam Dawson, Michelle Pfeiffer as Rita Williams, Dakota Fanning as Lucy Diamond Dawson, Diane Weist?
Weist?
As Annie Cassell.
She was in Parenthood.
Yep. As Annie Cassell. Loretta Devine as Margaret Calgrove. Richard Schiff, one of the few roles where I absolutely hate his guts.
Yes.
I love Richard Schiff, but boy, I hate him.
He's a dick in this film.
God. as Mr. Turner and Laura Dern as Miranda Randy Carpenter.
Randy.
All right, it's time for Joe to go over the making of the movie in his segment called Inception to Perception. There's a joke there, where he explains how this movie got off the ground in 10 minutes or less.
Don't get on the set, get ready to shoot, and then ask for rewrites. Studios do this crap all the time, and they wonder why they end up with a shit movie. Smoke and mirrors, guys! Welcome to the movie factory.
Movie? You know, I hate the word movie. I don't make movies, I make films.
Well, funny thing about this movie, there's not a whole lot on the making of this movie at all. Like, I was scouring. I was trying to find videos on YouTube for behind-the-scenes stuff. There is not a whole lot. I found a few pieces of trivia on IMDb. One is that Dakota Fanning's little sister, Elle Fanning, plays her at the age of three, when she's the age of three in it.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Which I was looking for right away. I was like, okay, where is she? Oh, there she is. But it's like a 7-second clip. Michelle Pfeiffer later admitted in interviews that making this film helped her get over a previous apprehension and fear she never knew she had toward mentally challenged individuals.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. And Dakota Fanning has a disabled aunt in real life.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Well,
I grew up this, and this is probably why I got so ticked, because I have a cousin who is mentally challenged, mm-hmm. and she's actually a whole lot like, oh crap, who was the friend that always quoted movies?
Oh,
Sam's friend. She is a lot like him. Like, she is.
I don't remember any of their names.
I don't either, but that character, the one that's always like, oh, 1936, like, he's always quoting like a movie trivia thing.
Yeah.
My cousin is a lot like that. And that's that. So, yeah.
Okay.
Hits me in the feels.
Yeah. So, that's really it. So, my 10 minutes is up, guys. That was all I got.
See? Ladies, he's quick. This is why you should love him.
Oh, it's so good.
All right. Do you remember the first time you saw this? What were your initial feelings after seeing it? Joel.
I remember seeing it in high school on TV, I'm pretty sure. I wanted to. At that time, I wanted to go into special education, so I really enjoyed the movie. But I always wanted to go back and actually watch it in its entirety.
Joe?
December 30th, it was literally, 7 days ago? This podcast, this is being recorded later on, but...
Yeah, and what's even funnier was, I think I had texted you not a week before that, because I had just seen it on Netflix and just watched it. I'm like, this is the greatest movie ever! And Joe was like... What? Joe had clearly never heard of IMC.
When I started on this podcast, we were saying we need to find movies that Joe has never seen. Might be the first.
First.
Yeah, it's not the first.
You had never seen Fantastic Mr. Fox.
No, and I had never seen Man from Snowy River.
Oh, but that was like
way before. We were doing
that
movies you haven't seen.
That was
before Joel.
That was BJ.
PJ.
BJ.
PJ. Pre-Joel.
That was before Joel, yeah. That's
just as
BJ.
Long as you don't get the pre before the beach.
Okay. Some would say that's more potent.
Okay. I saw it when it first came out on DVD in 2001 because somebody got it for Christmas. I don't know if it was me or my sister, but one of the two of us got it. Never saw it in the theaters, but it was a family movie. One of the things when we would get our movies on Christmas, we watched them as a family. Like, we'd sort of do like a little mini movie night. And everyone in my family, I remember like where we were all seated almost, because me and my dad were on the floor and everybody else is kind of on the couch behind us. And everybody sat through that movie. Like, I don't remember anybody moving, not even my brother, who like really probably wasn't into this. We all watched it. And I remember watching it. I fell in love with it. I watched through the DVD and then totally forgot about it, because the DVD... It had to have been my sister's, because I didn't take it with me. So it left and I didn't have it. And I completely forgot about I Am Sam until I saw it on Netflix. So literally until I sent Joe the text, I completely forgot about I Am Sam, which is kind of depressing because it's amazing.
Well, it's kind of funny because after you told me that, I remember seeing Netflix had popped it on my screen like, this is a movie you might like. And I was like, I don't want to watch I Am Sam. What is this? And then he nominates it. So I watch it on December 30th and I'm sitting there going, damn it, JC. I didn't want to have to feel tonight.
It's overrated.
And you know what? That's what's kind of sad, because like people that haven't watched it or just listening to it because they like want to hear it, I feel like when people find out a movie is going to make you feel something, like you're going to have emotions, I almost feel like that instantly makes somebody not want to watch a movie.
Oh,
and that's kind of...
10 times out of 10.
That's kind of sad, because this is one of those... I feel like this and Castaway... Those are two movies where, yes, go into the movie knowing it's going to make you feel emotions, but there are emotions you should feel to prove you're human.
Yeah. and going with Castaway, I'll say this. My grade is very similar to how I graded Castaway.
Yeah.
But at the same time, after feeling, like, I went into it thinking, great, a shitty movie. Let's see what I missed out on this time. And at the end, I was like, damn it, that was good. Son of a bitch.
Because, like, we grew up, but, like, recently it's gotten into that 2016, right? And so, like, we're still
2018, 2 years
and
later.
So, we like making, like, cynical remarks towards things, and we like making things that make us feel, we like turning them into jokes. And that was something like in Tropic Thunder. He talks about, every time I hear I Am Sam, I think of Tropic Thunder, because he talks about Sean Penn going home empty-handed.
Because he went full mentally challenged.
Yeah.
We won't use the actual term on here, but he went, hey, you can't go full you-know-what.
Yeah.
All
right, well, time for a summary. What is your summary of this movie in 10 words or less? Because I can't count. Joe. Joel. Sorry, Joel's first.
Mentally handicapped single father fights for daughter's custody.
That's pretty good.
Thank Joe.
Mentally challenged man wants to keep daughter despite thinking ahead.
And me, because I can't count, who decides what is best to keep a family together?
Yes.
And I had to get rid of, like, some words because, you know, 13 is more than 10.
It is what it is. Jason, all right. Do you want to start? Give us the synopsis of your movie that you've nominated.
All right. So here's the synopsis. Sam Dawson, Sean Penn, a mentally challenged man with the mind of a child, actually seven, no older than seven, is living in Los Angeles and is single-handedly raising his daughter, Lucy, played by Dakota Fanning. He fathered Lucy with a homeless woman who wanted nothing to do with Lucy and left him and her the day of her birth.
Now, did we know in this movie that she was homeless?
Not until they brought it up in court.
Did they bring it up in court that she was homeless?
Or bring it up in court.
Because Richard Schiff says it, and right. I thought he was doing it in a disparaging way.
Right.
No,
so I didn't know for sure if she was homeless or not, if he was just saying, oh, she was a druggie that you knew or met at Starbucks, and then she ran out on you.
Yeah.
I didn't know for a fact that she was homeless until now.
And there's also a phrase where she flat out says to you, or says to him, I was just looking for a place to sleep that night. I wasn't looking for a family, and I certainly wasn't looking to be a mother.
Oh, I must have missed that.
Yeah, she does say that. Yeah. She says, I was just looking for a place to sleep that night.
I totally missed that.
But now, in the year that we are in, that doesn't necessarily mean you're homeless.
No, it doesn't. But here's
looking for a free Uber ride.
And here is where the nitpicky starts is, and it, if my disdain for this character comes out, I mean, it's going to. But let's be honest, when you meet Sam's character, she kind of alludes like, oh, well, I was just looking to go to your house like for a night. She had to have initiated. Like, Sam would not have initiated a sexual encounter. When you watch his character, when you see, like,
he's too simple.
He's too simple, but he's also too terrified. Like, he wouldn't have engaged. So then, not only is she blaming him for the predicament, but she's blaming him for a predicament she created. Like, she would have been the one to initiate it. Yeah. Like, that's just...
And this is not a big qualm with the movie, but it's one of those, like, if you were to add something, they really kind of brush over the mom in this entire movie, because if she really is homeless and she really is as out of it as she thinks she is, how did, like, she stay in contact with him for 9 months? I feel like she would have been...
Oh, that is a big plot hole.
She would have been gone.
Yeah. I want to know more about the mom. I want to know what their relationship was beforehand so I could understand what happened during those 9 months.
And I can also get why they didn't want to go into that relationship, because that's not what they wanted the movie to be about. Right. But
it's also not necessary.
It does create, for somebody who really wants to dig deep, it creates a major plot hole. That's a good point.
Yeah. But, I mean, we can agree the movie works without all that information.
But it would be better. Yeah.
But this is a movie where you get emotionally invested. And so you're like, well, I want to know about her now. Like,
that's a very good point.
Both lawyers. I know about the judge, Dr. Kelso from Scrubs. I know about everyone. I know about the new
West Wing guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, how don't we know about the mom?
Catwoman's in the courtyard.
Yes, she is. All right. Although Sam provides a loving and caring environment for 7-year-old Lucy, she soon surpasses her father's mental capacity. Questions arise about Sam's ability to care for Lucy, and a custody case is brought to court.
Now, we've all worked in schools.
Yeah.
And we understand how DCS works.
Yeah.
I'm a little, this is one of the things that I bring up later on, and that is, normally they would have identified this earlier.
Way earlier. The hospital would have identified it.
Yeah. Like, they would have identified this and
because she would have
taken
shots and all of this.
The bus driver would have.
Yeah.
And not so much to take him away from her, but to keep him involved, but with
a support system.
He can involve himself with a foster family.
Which kind of, again, creates a major plot hole, because I almost feel like all of child DPS's child DCS's role, like, they're heartless. Like, and I get the movie is trying to make them a bad guy.
I've dated somebody who's from DCS, and their role is very unforgiving to families.
Oh, would you say that it was an accurate portrayal? Because I kind of felt like, I almost felt like the DCS woman was heartless when she didn't really need to be heartless, because she is smart enough to know what's going on.
It's hard to watch her tear a child away from the father.
Exactly, when she knows the child and the father need to stay together, but she cannot be alone with the father because of all of the other XYZ. That's where my believability kind of, I'm like,
I think that was DCS, Hollywoodized.
Yeah. But and I get that. They needed to make her the villain.
There's a legalization and documentation aspect that they have to take care of. Otherwise, they can't go through their court cases with any credibility whatsoever. Yeah. So when they say it's 2 hours, it's got to be 2 hours. Otherwise, they've got a chink in the armor when the lawyers attack them.
Yeah. All right.
It sucks that it's set up that way.
It is. And again, like, we're already, sorry, listeners, because we're barely into it, and we're already nitpicking, but it's so good that, like, you end up picking apart these nitpicky things. Mm. But yeah, DCS bad.
Yeah, in this movie they're saying DCS is bad.
Yeah. Sam is a man with a mental age of 7 who is well adjusted and has a great support system consisting of 4 similarly developmentally disabled men. His neighbor Annie, played by Diane Vist.
Yeah, we'll go with
Diane Vist.
what he said?
She's German.
A piano player and agoraphobe befriends Sam and takes care of Lucy when Sam can't. Sam works at a Starbucks bussing tables. Sam is popular with the customers, whom he addresses by name and favorite coffee. That's when I bought into the character. I got to admit, when I saw this scene, I'm like, wow, he has got autism down.
This,
like,
movie starts off with Starbucks, though.
Yeah,
it
starts, like, off with...
it's a Starbucks commercial.
Oh, yeah. Great opening scene.
Yeah.
We didn't say that. Great opening scene.
But yeah, mugs, and it's all about him, like putting everything together, and it's just like... Right from the get-go, I'm like, wow, Sean Penn is, like, doing method acting. Like, that's really good.
And for those simpler listeners out there, much like myself, agoraphobia is the fear of places and situations that might cause panic, helplessness, or embarrassment. Therefore, his neighbor does not go out much.
Yes. Most agoraphobes, their stigma is that they do not leave the house.
And we find out that that's primarily later because her father abused her. And so,
but it does,
that comes out a little bit later.
Going back to something you pointed out here, you know, all of his friends are also disabled. The person that he entrusts the daughter with has a disability. It's a support system that is created by ostracization from society.
Yeah.
And
look at the girl they create because they're ostracized from society.
And that's something that I'm going to talk about later, is how, you know, how is she developmentally as far as she is under the tutelage of the support system?
Yeah.
So that's something that I wonder about, but that might just be something that's in a background knowledge thing that we'll never know.
Yeah, so in order to, in his mind, as Sam, be a good father, he takes Lucy to work. Well, his job gets difficult when Lucy starts grabbing objects, making a woman spill iced coffee down her shirt. In a humorous but innocent exchange, Sam tries to remove an ice cube from the startled woman's cleavage. That was really funny. Awesome.
That's pretty good.
Sam then brings Lucy to his neighbor, and baby Lucy croons, "Annie." Sam says her first word was Annie. Flustered but flattered, she retorts, "And people worry you aren't smart." And she agrees to function as Lucy's babysitter and godmother.
Mm-hmm.
Lucy is as precocious as Sam is backwards. Sam loves reading Green Eggs and Ham by Dr. Seuss to her, but when she starts reading real hard books, like Stella Luna, she balks at reading the word different because she doesn't want to be smarter than her dad.
I thought it was interesting they used the word different. Of all the words they chose, I think it was
very smart that they did that.
that was pretty on the nose.
She knows he's different, quote, not like other dads, but that's all right with her because he is loving, taking her to the park and to the International House of Pancakes every Wednesday. But Wednesday is IHOP. Wednesday's IHOP night.
Nobody else's daddy takes him to the park.
That's true.
Thank you, Dakota. You just ooze sweetness in every scene you are in.
Speaking of IHOP, they decide to go to Big Boy for a change because Lucy had heard about Big Boy through school. And this is part of the problem with raising kids is as soon as they go to school, they get other ideas outside of parents and things like that. And Sam, wanting to be a good parent, finally changes to which an autistic mind, this would be incredibly difficult.
Oh, yes.
And traumatizing. And because Sam is traumatized, breaking his routine, he causes a disturbance because he cannot get the kind of French pancakes he is accustomed to. Hence, he broke his routine.
Which is funny because she actually orders the crepes for him and he doesn't know the term crepes. He knows them as French pancakes.
Exactly.
Yeah. That is how severe it is.
I caught that, too. At the school Halloween party for Lucy, he dresses as Paul McCartney, but embarrasses his daughter by drawing undue attention when he is the only parent amongst all of the kids.
Yeah.
Other kids tease her, calling her dad a, quote, retard. She tells one boy that she is adopted. This causes a crisis at her upcoming 7th birthday party, which results in an unexpected visit from a social worker who takes Lucy away after a big blow-up when Sam tries to prove that he is Lucy's father.
Well, isn't this when he tries to move the kid over and the kid says that he got hit or something like that?
Yes. All he does is pick up the kid and move him, and the kid claims that he was hit.
Yeah,
yes.
And then the dad flies in and tackles him into the bounce house.
Yep.
Yeah. This was one of the scenes I was like, I can't picture this actually happening. But I mean, at this time, this might have really happened in this part of the culture. I've never lived in California or wherever it is.
And that's the thing. I have to keep reminding myself, this is 2001.
Right. Yeah.
We're now 2018. Would this happen today? No.
But in today's political correct culture, no way.
Exactly.
In
this PC culture, it wouldn't. But back in 2001, the sad thing is part of me is like, because I'm like, this would never, but then like, I kind of had to remind myself.
They're very liberal with the word retard in this movie, too.
Well, that's how it was in 2001.
Yeah.
Right. But no, I mean, I'm the same way as you. Like, there were so many times I was like, this would not happen. This would not have happened. Like, people don't act this way. And I'm going to talk about that later. But I mean, I had to keep reminding myself, no, people are like this. I remember from the time I was in third grade, I was doing like reading groups with the special education classrooms. That's something I just always wanted to do. And so I was very lucky that my mindset was very different than the kids that I was in class with. But I remember some of the kids in high school, like the way that they talked about the kids that I worked with and the things that I heard. I was like, I can't believe that your mind processed that and two, thought that it was okay to talk to me like that.
Yeah.
I mean.
And that's where this movie is more realistic and will hit you in the fields is because you realize, damn, there are people just like this. And they think it's funny or they think it's okay and they think they're right and they have the high moral ground. And it's just like, since I can't say it on the podcast.
And this scene as a director is a timing scene. I mean, if the timing's off at any point, somebody walks in the door at the wrong time, you got to start the scene all over again.
Yep.
And because it's a timing scene, you...
With kids. Timing scene with kids.
Timing scene with kids with so much conversation that has to go on. Boom, boom, boom. It was almost Sorkin-ish.
Yeah.
When you have those kinds of moments, as a director, you start to wonder, if this gets pulled off, will it be seen as too coincidental or just enough to be believable?
Yeah, that's true. Like, you clearly have to get from A to B.
Right.
I know I really need to go A, B, C, D, but I'm really just going to go A to C. Like, I got to get there.
And I think Sean Penn saves it and goes, you know, because at the end, you're just going, I just want to watch him. Because it's an acting clinic that he's putting on.
It really is.
Should have won it.
And the lady from Child Services, she originally, which I don't think we mentioned, she saw him when he was in the jail because they thought that he was soliciting a prostitute.
That's right. I completely forgot about that.
So the reason that she
which no money was exchanged.
No. I was also wondering why he was arrested. Again.
Here's the thing. And based on that, and I'll go back to what I was going to say. I have to often, like, especially right now, remind myself of, I think, what I said on the very first podcast is, like, if everything was realistic, we wouldn't want to watch it. And so, like, the movie was meant to entertain, and sometimes you have to throw some wild things in there, and that's why we're tuning in. Like, we want to see things that maybe wouldn't really happen in real life, or that we want to be able to put an image to. But yeah, he's getting dinner or something in what turns out to be a prostitute, which I think that might have been pretty clear. They were also very stereotypical with that prostitute, weren't they? She was just like a crop top.
They don't look like cleavage that, by the way.
Asian. Oh. like you would find in, like, I don't know, like, they in any old stereotypical New York City movie.
Yeah, in a movie,
hardly speaks English. She's like, look for a good time.
And she was a,
like,
movie whore. She wasn't a real whore.
Oh yeah, 100%. It was Hollywood, and he's just being nice, and he's talking to her like about his daughter or whatever. But I can't remember in the jail how the lady from Child Services finds out that he has a daughter. Does she come and, like, pick him up? Or did he calls her and he's talking to her on the phone?
So what happens is the sergeant at the desk, the scene starts with the sergeant at the desk saying, I think this is one of the first times where I genuinely believe the guy when he says he didn't know she was a hooker.
Yeah.
And what the sergeant says to the woman from DCS, I think she was there on another case. She wasn't there for Sam. She overhears him say, all I want to do is get this guy back to his daughter.
That's when
she perks up. When she perks up, the DCS lady perks up when the sergeant says he just wants to get back to his daughter.
You're right.
And, of course, she instantly kind of freaks out as a DCS person because she's like, this guy just got arrested for soliciting a prostitute, and he's going back to a daughter? And then they find out, like, he's mentally like this, and so that's sort of what got her on her track of destruction.
Yeah.
So she takes the child out. She takes Lucy away. The DCS woman takes Lucy away after the birthday party. They put her in front of a judge and Sam in front of a judge. And the judge rules that he is only allowed 2 supervised visits for 2 hours per week. And this scene is the first time I feel like somebody punched me in the nuts. Mm. Because when Sean Penn as Sam starts saying, why can't I take Lucy? What do you mean I won't see Lucy? You realize, again, for an autistic person, this is the first time in 7 years, A, their routine is getting broken, but you are taking a family member from a mentally challenged person. You want to talk about ruining a person's mental stability. Every time I see this scene and the way Sean Penn breaks down, when I watched it on Netflix, I actually had to get up and, like, walk out of the room because it affects me personally so much every time.
Yeah. Not only, like, watching this being older, but now, since the first time you saw it, having worked with a bunch of students that are on the autism spectrum and also having a son of your own, is it clear now watching it like a totally different one movie, but seen as a whole?
Yeah, because
has to be.
I don't think I ever cried at that point before, like way back when I saw it. I think I cried more at maybe I did. But that part, literally, I think that part was the hardest because I did. I was in my head like, nobody's taking my son from me. Mm-hmm. I'm like, God damn it, no.
Yeah,
and even now I'm kind of like getting emotional thinking about it because it's just like, and Sean Penn's doing a clinic because those are like genuine emotional tears. I don't know what he was thinking about, or hell, he's probably thinking
of the scene itself.
Of the scene itself. The scene itself would be enough. Or I think Sean Penn is a father. So if as a dad, I can openly say if I was thinking about if I was an actor, all I'd have to do is think about somebody taking away my kid. And that whole thing is just so real and so honest. And the whole time I want to be like, because they get it every day so many times, does the judge literally feel nothing watching this in front of him? Or is this just the director trying to show this is how little society actually understands autism? Because this judge just sees what he thinks is a bad father, and he's saving the daughter by taking away from a bad father, and he doesn't understand how mental illness works, how autism works. And that's just, there's so much wrapped up in that scene.
Yeah, one of the things they really don't touch on is the other side of this argument, which is that realistically, it is, I think he needs help. with parenting the child.
Oh, 100% agree.
100%. And but this movie gets you to, you know, root on, no, I want him to do it on his own, yeah, knowing full well it's probably the wrong decision overall.
Agreed.
And when you said that, you know, the justice, you know, is very unfeeling about it, I think you're right. I think that they see a lot of these cases every single day, and they have to remove themselves emotionally from it. Otherwise, they break down in every single one of these cases.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and in order to stay as unbiased as possible, you got to close yourself off. But you know that they take that shit home with them.
Yeah, I would. Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sam's friends recommend that he hire Rita, played by Michelle Pfeiffer, a lawyer who
and
is
hot. Oh, my yeah. God.
Pfeiffer looks good in this.
Woo!
Who is a lawyer that is apparently the best lawyer in the world. And she must have a lot of commercials because, like, each of his friends will, like, quote her commercial in a different way. And it's kind of a
she's in the Yellow Pages, so you must be good.
Yeah, yeah. That's the best ad I've ever seen. That's the best ad I've ever seen in the Yellow Pages. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's the best ad I've ever seen in the Yellow Pages.
Have they gone to buy the shoes yet?
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, they have?
Yeah, the shoes were bought before the birthday
party.
This
is one of my favorite scenes.
When they bought the shoes.
When they all buy the shoes together.
Yeah.
I love that, because they're
when
just
the
like,
one guy, like, brings the leopard pair, he's like, I think she'll like these. They're like, they're size 13.
Did I miss that scene? Was I brushing my teeth?
You may have been.
I do not remember the scene
It's a funny scene. And they finally buy shoes. Like, there's one, he's like, look, these light up. And, like, that scene makes me laugh every time because that is my son. My son is like, daddy, these shoes light up. I'm like, yeah, they're also way too big for you.
Yeah.
I always assumed as a kid they were just super expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Like a
yeah,
new car.
Yeah, plug those in at night.
No, daddy for Christmas totally saw BB-8 light-up shoes, so daddy totally bought those for him, and daddy is depressed because they are like a size too big.
Better than a size too small.
They don't fit him, and I'm like, oh, man, not yet. But, of course, he's opened them already, so all he wants to do is wear them, and, like, I can't even, like, strap them tight enough for them to work.
I love that you call yourself daddy.
Come to papa!
Well placed, Joe.
Well done.
Well placed.
All right, so needless to say, Sam cannot afford Rita as a lawyer. Still, he shows up at her office and starts spelling out his situation while she juggles coffee orders to her assistant, Patricia. Socially, Sam is rather high-functioning and more together in many ways than his high-class, respected lawyer, whose marriage is falling apart and whose son hates her.
Which, I love her arc in this.
I do. She has a great arc and a very... almost very real arc, especially for like the early 2000s and all that. Like, that was totally what was going on in terms of, like, and I'm not even trying to be a gender thing, like, in terms of, like, the go-get-em parent. I love my father, but my father was not around a lot because he had to provide. He had to go out and make money and all this stuff. And so there were times where I resented him. So it was a nice over arc for her.
Yeah.
It's very necessary. And even, like, her scene at the end, which I'm looking forward, and I don't think we talk about her scene at the end where she breaks down and talks about her son.
Oh, where she knocks down all the origami?
Ugh,
yeah. And she's that like, was you like, don't. That was a powerful
that
scene.
That was a for your consideration Academy Awards, please. And I'm surprised she was not nominated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, if it weren't for her character in this arc that y'all are talking about, at that point, her role with her son, I was thinking, oh, well, who is fit to be a parent? Because she doesn't know what her son's doing, she can't answer her son's phone calls. At least Sam is, like, at the phone, ready if his daughter ever calls. He's there to pick her up. He's always with her. And so that was the biggest battle of this movie. And there was no point where I was like, I don't want to like this movie, but I was definitely trying to do my best as a podcaster to watch it and say, like, okay, am I, like, I need to look at the good and look at the bad. And I was like, this is such a necessary part, and this is a thing that needs to be talked about.
If you want,
I'm so happy you said that because I didn't put it in my top three or bottom three, but it's something that needs to be said. I think I know exactly what the screenwriters are doing, and it's exactly what you said. Who the hell knows what it means to be a parent? And who has the right to say you're a good parent and you're a bad parent? And that's what this movie is trying to get at is no parent knows what – I am a parent right now, and I am not – stupid enough to say I have all the answers. There are instances where I am terrified. Heck, I just found out about a situation that another parent is going through, and it is a horrible situation. And she says to me, she's like, every time I look at your son, I think of my son. And then, like, I'm in my head going, like, well, is my son going to turn into the horrible situation she's now dealing with? Like, no parent is ready for this.
And that's honestly, I don't think I say it later, but maybe my biggest qualm with the movie, I sat there like my mom during a football game. who's just like the most vocal person. She'll like she'll say run, 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 run. I'm like, they are, they know. And
be quiet, lady. Like,
yeah, there was some animosity in high school. She makes fun of me for it, but it's fine. But like I'm sitting there during like my roommate walked in and I'm watching the movie. I'm like, why are they not saying this? Or like, how does this point not come up? And I was so mad because I'm like, literally, like, all you have to say is nobody knows what a good parent is. And I can't believe they missed this in the writing. If they missed it, it's because it wasn't meant to be in the movie, and that's fine. But the entire time they're like, well, how do you know that you're a good parent? And like, I was just waiting for Sam to say, like, how do any of us know we're a good parent?
Yeah, but we also know that he would have never, like, he wouldn't have been able
right. But like
to
the lawyer or anybody, like, there had to have been more than one parent in that courtroom. And I'm like, I'm so surprised nobody said it.
I'm happy you said that. I think people thought it. And I think it's there. The reason it's never said is because who could have said it? Rita can't say it because if Rita says it, she's leading her client. Yeah. And the other lawyer isn't going to say it because that's going to make his case for him.
That's a
and
good point.
So I 100% agree. And in all the times I've seen this, I felt exactly what you're feeling. So it took many, many times for me to watch it. And what I came to sort of be okay with it is nobody can say what I want them to say because Rita would lose the case because she's feeding her client.
Oh, that's true.
Sam's not going to create that because he doesn't have the mental capacity to create that thought. And the other lawyer certainly isn't going to say it because it would make his case for him. Although now is no.
When she attacks the one woman with her son who had OD'd, that's the closest they get to talking about what a good parent could do.
And they kind of do it with Annie when they bring up her dad, but you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah, those
also,
are the two closest.
That different mother. Mom from Step Brothers.
Yes. The
Mary Steenburgen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Married to Ted Danson.
Oh.
I didn't know she was married to
good
Ted
for
Danson.
Her.
Yeah.
And him.
What I want to say was that this movie. You're right. I think here's the thing. If they said it, it'd be too on the nose. Then it's like, okay, now we're jamming it down. You have to come to it on your own.
You can't handle the truth.
And this movie does a brilliant job of, as I said earlier, getting you on the side of Sam. And they do that by avoiding the following phrase: "There's a difference between a good parent and a capable parent."
Oh, that's true.
They never touch that, and
that would have like. Thrown up.
Exactly. And the director and the story, the screenwriters were right to leave that out. If you want to be on Sean Penn's side, you do not bring that up. It's all good, 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 good. Because we all look at him and go, look at how much he loves her. He's a great parent.
Yeah.
Soul capable. That's a little bit different story.
That's a whole different story.
Yeah.
So needless to say, Sam wants Rita to be her or to be his lawyer, but she says, well, I can't do it, but I have the number of a friend. And Sam gets all excited. Sam even tells Lucy, oh, I met Rita. And Lucy even quotes the Rita commercial and is like, you're going to get Meter Maid Rita and all
of this? Lovely Rita, Meter Maid.
Lovely Rita, Meter Maid lady.
That's the Beatles song.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize
that. The number of Beatles songs that are mentioned in this movie is like...
This movie was
sponsored by Starbucks and the Beatles.
Yeah.
There's the Abbey Road walk across the street.
Oh, that's so funny.
I missed that one.
I'm happy you said that. I always thought that was like a jingle from her commercial.
You should
have
sit there with all the lyrics, all the song titles of the Beatles song and just be like, okay, check mark them as like bingo.
It's like
when you play the game.
The drinking game, yeah.
P.S. I love you. Oh, there it is.
So needless to say, like he tells Lucy that he's going to get that she is going to find her friend and get this lawyer.
Which is a bullshit line.
Exactly. And everybody else knows that she used the line, well, I'll phone a friend to blow him off to get him away. Again, Sam, being mentally capable in some areas, goes to a Rita at a party and flat out says to her, did you find the number of your friend? But he is saying this in front of all of her colleagues. Stunned, she announces that she's taking his case pro bono. And his reaction and that whole conversation is amazing. I love it because it sort of cements those two characters into their roles.
Of course I said I was going to do it. Don't you remember, silly?
He's like, but that's... And then he literally repeats word for word what she said before, which totally throws her under the bus. But again, she takes it, and everyone else in the room looks on at her as cold and heartless. Rita begrudgingly works with Sam to help him keep his parental rights, but chaos arises when Lucy convinces Sam to help her run away from the foster home she is being kept in during the trial.
Somebody's got to put like a leash on Lucy because she screws everything up in this movie.
Yeah. But she does, but again, it proves she is smarter than her dad.
She's smarter than almost every adult in the room in this.
Yeah.
Over More manipulative than her dad.
Ah.
That's true. Over the course of the trial, Sam gets a new job at a Pizza Hut, and Annie leaves her apartment for the first time in years to speak for him. Sam also helps Rita with her family problems and helps her to realize how much her son really means to her. Sam also convinces her to leave her husband because Rita told him that he cheated on her.
It was cool to see Sam sitting on the couch with her son.
And her realizing how quickly they related.
Yeah. And I think her issue was just she was never home. She was always working.
Yeah.
That's it. You stay home half the time and you're good to go.
Yeah.
And she was a workaholic. It was meant to be that way. I mean, the driving scene is amazing.
It's a great scene, but was the phrase I'm about to say, I can't remember, was it in the after she knocked down the origami wall, or was it when she's first talking to him in her apartment to prep him for his day on the stand? And that's the line when she says, I scream horrible things at him. I yell at him and scream horrible things at him just to get him out of the car. And, like, there are times, I've never done that as a parent.
I think it's the origami scene.
But there are times as a parent where you're like, I just want my kid to listen to me. I love my kid. I know my kid loves me. Why won't he listen?
Yeah.
Why won't they do what I want? And I can see the anger and the frustration, but it's not out of hate, even though, as she says, she said hateful things. Like, that's just, and yet Sam is instantly able to solve that problem for her, and yet he has the mental capacity of a 7-year-old.
Yeah.
All right. During the trial, however, when it's Sam's turn on the stand, he breaks down after a horrible badgering.
Yeah, from Richard Schiff.
Oh, Mr. Turner.
I love him. I hate him in this movie.
He is a great actor. I love him too.
I hate him in this movie.
Yeah.
And I also, the sad thing is I hate his character in this movie, but he's playing his character exactly how his character would be played. That's what I hate.
Because there's a moment in the movie where he's like, it's almost like he hasn't won in a while, or he's been like fed. Like there's a chip on his shoulder, and I feel like they say something where he's like, "There's a chip on his shoulder, and he just needs a win."
That's a good point. There's
like this crossroads between like you know what he doesn't really fully believe in what he's doing, but he needs a win so bad, and so there's this battle between he needs a win and Sam needs his daughter.
And I'm happy you said that, because that explains why when Sam is on the stand, Turner breaks him down.
Yeah.
Turner says everything that could possibly set him off, and he ends up having a mental breakdown and literally says exactly what Turner wants him to say to prove he is a bad father. Mm-hmm. And it ends up with him crying and screaming, I want to stop, I want to stop, I want to stop. And you're just so angry at Turner. But Joel just said it. Like, all Turner wanted is the win. And Turner did exactly what he needed to. But boy, he crushed Sam in the process.
And the lawyers do act very, very haphazardly to each other. There's no way a justice would allow that personal attacking of the lawyers to be happening in this courtroom. I mean, it got vicious there between them. And I don't care what level of court it is. Judge got to get that in order.
That's true. So,
Kelso's never been one to care.
As a result, after being convinced that Sam isn't capable of taking care of his own daughter, Lucy, he watches Lucy be placed with a foster family who plan to adopt her. Lucy is happy with this family. After Sam loses the case, he leaves. He stops. He is awarded visits, and he doesn't go to the visits. In a way, he actually kind of crushes Lucy because
he feels he's lost.
He does the exact thing that she always loved him was. He was always there, and he's not. He leaves.
Do we ever see the dad of this foster family?
Yeah, we do.
Once. One time he answers the door, and he's standing behind her like a coward.
And he takes Lucy from her. And we kind of see Lucy fall in love with Randy, with this foster family.
They're painting, they're...
Then Sam and Rita have their blow up, and Rita sort of points out that he doesn't have the cornered market on tragedy and all this, and so they continue to fight. He moves into a house down the block from the foster family, comes back, and this is another scene that gets me every time. And it's when Lucy comes running out and just starts pounding on Sam.
Yeah. Well, she runs out with a smile, and as soon as she gets about 2 feet from him, then it just turns into anger.
And it's totally legit. Like, I would completely understand a kid doing this, because the one thing she always loved Sam for, he took away from her. And he kind of works to get it back. He never does anything wrong. Randy, of course, with a higher mental capability, sees Sam walking dogs by their house, seeing Sam buying her cookies and doing all this stuff, and he's just trying to do what he thinks is good stuff. Mm-hmm. And Randy's like, you're trying to undermine him, and we're now going to try to adopt her and all this stuff. Well, while all this is going on, Lucy starts running away from her foster parents.
At night.
At night, and staying with Sam. And Sam brings her back every time.
Which, did you notice her bedroom?
No.
She has a bed, and she sleeps in a hammock like she used to when she was a kid.
I did not notice that.
Did that change? Because she slept in the bed. Did that change after she has her sort of makeup with her dad?
I think so.
So I'm wondering, yeah, okay.
But I think that him bringing her back the first time was the olive branch that she needed to see. Like, I'm not trying to undermine anything. She's
and
yours.
And he did it instantly.
She brought it to me, and I know it's unsafe for her to be on the streets. She needs to be with you.
Yeah.
My question is, where's all his money coming from?
Sam's?
Rita has to be helping him.
I mean, but before that, I mean, you're living in an apartment. You're taking care of one with a Starbucks salary.
I don't know.
I was wondering, like, is he getting welfare? Is he getting...
It's a MacGuffin.
It's a MacGuffin. Is he getting financial aid?
That's a good question. I don't know.
Yeah, because then he buys a house nearby or an apartment nearby. Where'd that money come from? He didn't win the case.
That one, I wonder, because at that point, I also think Rita had moved out. And I'm wondering...
If she staked him?
If she helped him out, yeah. So needless to say, Sam, by continuing to bring Lucy back, every time Lucy brings her, or Sam brings Lucy back to Randy and the foster family, Randy's sort of stone veneer begins to crack.
Yeah.
And she actually one day has a mental breakdown with Sam and flat out says to Sam, tomorrow in court, I was going to tell them that you are not a capable father and ask them to give me Lucy as a parent. And she looks at him with tears in her eyes and says, I couldn't do that because I'd be lying. Mm-hmm. And then Sam says, are you saying what I think you're saying? Are you saying what I think you're saying? Because
we really don't know what he's thinking. So
exactly. And she says, yes. And he's like, yeah, yeah. And he's like, he's trying not to get excited. But then he makes a realization. And he looks at Randy. He's like, can I tell you something? He's like, would you not tell the judge that I can't do this on my own? And at that moment, when those two realize they need each other, that's another one. That's scene three that gets me every time. When those two finally realize, because Randy has fallen in love with Lucy. She sees how much Sam loves Lucy, but Sam has grown and learned mentally, I can't do this. And Randy is a mom, and Lucy is going to need a mom. And so can they do this together? And
I was waiting for the ballsy move of her the next day. Using that comment against him in court to take her fully.
Oh, you're such a cynic.
No, well, because
the movie had already restarted like four times.
Yes, exactly. This movie could have ended three places.
Yes, 100%.
If you want to make a statement about how people treat the mentally challenged in this country, you end it with that.
Oh, boy, but boy, everybody would have left pissed.
It would have left pissed, but I guarantee you. You do that, now it's a nominee for Best Picture.
That's true.
Because you're saying something that otherwise it just turns into, and I don't like to use the term, but a sap fest.
That's true.
You know, it pulls your heartstrings, but in the end, you're getting what you want. Happy ending. Which we'll get to the ending. Why don't we go to the ending?
I'm really glad that this was the last scene, because the entire time I'm watching the movie thinking, are they trying to make me believe in, like, is the purpose of this movie to make me think Sam is fully capable of being a 100% independent parent? And working with all these people, I'm like, no, I don't think he is. And so, the whole movie, I'm trying to convince myself, yes, he is a capable, independent parent, but, he's not.
He's not. And all need is love.
Like, the kid, exactly. And that part of the movie, I was like, they can't honestly be trying to teach me that, because, I've worked with kids, and one of the kids, he had Down syndrome, and both of his parents had Down syndrome.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And I was thinking, but what they did was they had a condo next to their parents.
Yeah. Right.
And their parents came and checked. I was like, there needs to be something in this movie about that support system. Like,
what
I said
is
at the very beginning.
Support system?
Exactly. And I was like, they had to have put this in place. And then when he says, I need help, I was like, thank you. Like, I didn't realize that's what I was looking for the whole movie.
Yeah.
But that brought everything. I was like, I believe this.
Yes.
Like, I finally believe this, and that you're right. He is a better support system and he's a better parent. But that support system also needs a support system that can plan a college budget and can get her first car and
help her with becoming a woman, as they bring that up later.
Yeah.
Like all of that stuff. So in the end, the foster family who planned on adopting Lucy let Sam have custody, but Sam also works with them and says that Lucy still needs a mother and asks if the foster mother would like to help raise Lucy. The movie ends with Lucy's soccer game where Sam is the referee. In attendance are Lucy's former foster family, the newly divorced Rita and her son, with whom Rita has renewed her relationship, along with Annie and Sam's other friends. And cut. According to our good people at Rotten Tomatoes, well, that's bullshit, because they're not good people, it has a tomato meter rating of 35%. Hey, look, it shows their stupidity. The critics, on average, gave the film a 4.6 out of 10. Well, they've screwed up,
that's
too.
That's pretty harsh. Like, I read a lot of the reviews on there, and like, I can understand what they were saying, but they rated it way too low because of those reasons.
Yeah, and I read a lot of the, because when I, and this is getting into maybe too much too early, but I was so pissed because I purposely watched the Academy Awards because I'm, and still to this day, I'm not saying Denzel shouldn't get a Academy Award. He should have, but Penn was better. I'm sorry. Penn was better. I'm not saying Denzel doesn't deserve an Academy Award. He just didn't in 2001, but I am convinced that the reason for a lot of them is people didn't understand mental health and autism. And let's be honest, in 2001, I didn't either. Yeah. Now I have a whole lot of knowledge, so I am biased. I need to acknowledge my bias way at the beginning. But even back then in 2001, I'm like, these people are full of S-H-I-T.
It's a hit.
The audience score, which is the average rating of the audience gave the film, is 3.7 out of 5, with 86 agreeing it's a 3 or higher. See? Audiences are so smart.
Yeah. All right.
All right. Now it's time to do a segment we call Did the Awards Get It Right? They didn't. Joe, what did you find out?
Big year for the Spectrum.
Yes. At the Academy Awards, this was nominated for one nomination, the Best Actor Award, and boy, was it up against some competition.
Yeah.
You had Denzel Washington for Training Day, who was very good. You had Russell Crowe in A Beautiful Mind, who was also playing Mentally Challenged. You had Sean Penn. You had Will Smith playing Ali. I mean, and then Tom Wilkinson, who's good in whatever he does. But this is funny because of this.
I forgot about Russell Crowe. I completely forgot about him.
This was the year that Halle Berry won for Dorothy Dandridge and Denzel won for this. It was the first time they had two African-Americans winning for Best Actor and Best Actress. Politically, they were going to do this. But regardless, you could throw a dart at a dartboard, I think, and hit whomever you wanted in this group to win, and it would have been justified, and everybody else would have been pissed off.
No, that's true, and I'm biased, and I certainly hope people listening don't think it's a race thing, because Will Smith and Denzel Washington were amazing. They do both deserve. I'm just... It's probably because of my cousin. Like, I am biased because of my cousin, but I thought he did great.
Yeah.
Russell Crowe, yeah. Well, I forgot about those other ones. They all did great.
I will say two things about this segment. One, old Tom Wilkinson's best role? Rush Hour. No debate.
I was going to say, as the priest in Exorcism of Emily Rose.
Oh. Yeah. No, Rush Hour it is. 1998. But the other thing, when we go into the other nominees of awards that they got, every single award that Dakota Fanning was nominated for, whether it be Best Young Actress or Best Youth Actress, Best Anything that Dakota Fanning was nominated for, she won.
Yeah.
Best Performance in a Feature Film.
But these were not Artist Awards. These were not Golden Globes or Academy Awards.
No. Yeah. No.
Like MTV Movie Awards.
Right. Well, what was it? It was
Kids
Young
Choice
Artist Awards.
Kids' Choice.
Phoenix Film Critics Society.
SAG?
Let's see. Las Vegas Film Critics.
Screen Actors Guild?
Broadcast Film Critics? No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
But like everything that she was nominated for, she won. So it's like we can at least say Dakota Fanning, good for her.
I am surprised that they didn't give Pennant for the Golden Globes. Because that's usually where they do the makeup for the Academy Awards. Like, okay, they're not going to win the Academy Award, but we'll give it to them there.
Yeah, you're right.
But that's it. That's all it gets right there. So we're going to close out that segment.
What did you think after watching the film, Joel?
I thought that it was a very good movie. It was different from when I was in high school, though. When I was expecting a very different movie when I turned it on a couple days ago than to what I remember in high school. But again, your mind develops.
Yeah.
What about you, Joe?
It was a little long. But it's a very good film. It's very good. I'm kind of surprised I hadn't seen it yet, actually. I mean, you guys joked about it. That's fine. Movies Joe hasn't seen. I'm surprised I didn't see this. And maybe it's because I heard all the vitriol about this movie from the critics when I was much younger and going, it's not worth my time. Then I'm not going to spend $12 on this. Maybe it was my bias at the time, you know, not having worked with special education students and all that stuff. You know, of course I can say that I had a bias back then. Yeah. And maybe that's what led to me not seeing it until now. But maybe it's why I got to see it now. There's a reason why I saw it now, because I can appreciate it now.
Yeah.
So, JC?
I also agree. It is long. I almost feel like there's entire sections in the middle where, like, you can just cut this out. Like, if you cut this out, you still have the meat of the movie. But I also forgot how much this movie makes me want to cry. Like, literally, when I watch it, I'm like, oh, man, I forgot how much this hits you in the feels.
Do you think that if you took out the Rita stuff at the end, where you get to know what her life is like at the end, that could have been the original script, and then they put it in there to kind of bolster the fact that it's about being a good parent, it's not about a capable parent?
I don't know. I honestly don't.
Okay, all right. Well, it's just an idea I throw off just now.
All right, on to our next segment titled Top 3, Bottom 3. This is where we pick our top three things we love or scenes we like in the... This is where we pick our top three things we love or scenes we like in this movie, and then we choose three things we dislike about the film and or that we find the weakest. Let's start with the top three. Joel, what are your top three things that you want to highlight in this movie?
My number three is his friends, his little group of buddies.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, they might be the best part of this movie.
I haven't seen a group that fun since The Ringer.
Yes. And it makes you wonder, like, how are more... like mentally, and I want to say,
well, one's
disabled.
One's been in several movies,
right? But some of them, like, this was their only movie.
Yeah,
and I'm like, how are like more developmentally different actors? How are there not more of them like getting roles?
Yeah,
because they're bias. So funny. They're so bias. Like genuine. And everything they do in the movie, you believe. Which again, I was talking about Kevin Spacey, who's an amazing actor, and Jamie Foxx, who's a great actor. I can't watch them in anything without saying like, that's Jamie Foxx acting.
Yeah.
Or that is so-and-so acting.
I don't think
James
we've seen
Franco.
Kevin Spacey in a while.
Well, we yeah. But like when I see these guys, I'm like, this is such like a fun, genuine like acting job. My number two is Sean Penn is very much believable.
Yeah.
Very much believable. And Dakota Fanning was also very much believable. They both did their roles super well. And number one, the idea that not all parents are fit. I love that that came up that, hey, we don't know what a good parent is, even though it wasn't said flat out. We have no idea what a good parent is or what it takes to be a good parent, and there's no way to prove that in court. I would argue, I would love to find 10 parents at the school and be like, if you sat in front of a judge, could you prove that you were a good parent? I have a feeling that...
How do you argue opinion?
Yeah, like I have a feeling that 9 out of 10, if not 10 out of 10, would be like, no, I would not. Like, yeah. There's no way I could like prove that I'm a good parent, because you can't.
Yeah.
You don't know until the future. It doesn't matter what their IQ is. And I think that this brought up a very, very good topic that you don't talk about in movies. And that is people don't talk about in general. No. I mean, how many times have you been sitting at your house or at the pub and saying, hey, what do y'all think about mentally challenged parents? Never.
No.
Not once. So this is one of those things. It forces something that needs to be talked about, whether you want to talk about it or not. And the entire time I watched this movie, I was like, I don't think I want to talk about this.
Yeah.
There are plenty of things in my life that I run from.
Most of our shows are very like, you know, fun, fun, fun. This is when I was like, we're not going to have a lot of fun on this one. We'll have a very deep discussion, actually, though. Yeah.
But that's my top three. What about you, Joseph?
My number three is anytime Sean Penn and Dakota Fanning are the only ones on the screen. Because I could watch the two of them have a conversation for 2 hours. They both, I mean, you're watching Dakota Fanning at her peak as a child actor, and you're watching Sean Penn. I mean, I'm going to go to him at number one. Actually, I won't talk about Penn, but Fanning herself is a revelation in this. You're sitting there going, good God, where did the talent go, as per lately? My number two is the recording of the outgoing message on the answering machine.
Oh my God.
That is brilliant. That's a great scene. That is a good scene.
I love as he's yelling like, hello, Lucy, how are you? That may have been way too much.
Fun fact, Dakota Fanning is going to be in Ocean's 8.
Oh, no. Number one. My number one is probably the most important one, and that is Penn is not over the top and very easily could have been. I mean, this was a measured and patient performance, because you go a little too far, it becomes a caricature. You go too low, it becomes a safe role.
And not believable.
And he took you right to the line and made you believe that this person actually exists in the real world and acts like this amongst others. And you got to see, as people acted with him, he was elevating everybody else's game around him.
Yep.
So those are my three. JC, what were yours?
My number three is the shoe scene. I completely forgot about that until we did the podcast. So the shoe scene. Mm-hmm. And I said it already in the analysis, the scene where Penn realizes he's not going home with Lucy. Ugh. I mean, it's a sad scene, but everything up to that point, Sam is only happy. This is the first time, even when the homeless woman leaves, like, Sam kind of is sad, but then he starts raising Lucy. Like, this is the punch in the gut. This is the, like, and it's also probably some of Penn's best acting in the movie is when he loses it. And again, I could also say with Joe, every scene with Penn and Fanning being the only ones, but since he already said it, I'll say every scene when Penn quotes the Beatles.
Yeah.
Because again, I can say this because I know how autism works. And once you understand how autism works, every time he quotes a Beatles song, he's answering somebody's question. Like, somebody just asked him a question, and they're listening to it like it's babble. They're listening to it like it doesn't make sense. And I get so pissed watching it now as a 34-year-old adult, because I want to scream at the TV, he's answering your question, but you don't know that he's answering your question.
Yeah.
And it just pisses me off, but it's also really good. And so for that specifically, the screenwriter, but really this was a brilliantly written movie. I really like the so screenwriters did a good job.
I'll say this, it bothers me now that Joe said, like, he looked like, for a long time, you said about like the inception to perception, the fact that there is no video of them like going and doing research with people that are on the spectrum or that had this condition that Sam has.
Oh, and you know that, Penn, well, you know Penn did.
Penn did,
you
spend Penn time at a school for about 3 months actually working with people.
Right.
Yeah.
And maybe situation. It's better off that there's no footage, that it makes it more genuine that he was doing it for, you know, the relation. But how good would that feature be to watch him go in
and
build
for
relationships?
To see what that's a good point.
Gosh, it would probably be as powerful as the documentary about Jim Carrey and Man in the Moon.
Oh, dude, that was great.
Yeah.
But like, I don't usually watch featurettes, but I would probably sit down and watch all of Sean Penn hanging out at this school, going to lunch with kids or whatever it might be, having like one-on-one conversations, playing checkers, whatever it is.
And I get that some of our listeners may be like, well, of course you three are feeling this way because you've all worked with kids like this, so you're biased towards that.
I didn't always, though.
But I like what you just said, because I almost feel like if that feature had existed, then people who have no idea where we're coming from or don't understand why we are so passionate or so angry about some of how this is happening, I feel like a feature like that would almost be a crash course. It wouldn't show them exactly what we have to deal with, but it would almost be a bit of a mini crash course into welcome to like a day in the life, kind of. Yeah. And
that's a Beatles song.
And I kind of
a day in the life.
There you go.
Gosh,
are you Sam?
Samuel.
I am.
Are you Sam?
JC. All right, let's move on to our bottom three. Time to vent, Joel.
My number three, as it always tends to be. I don't like that it gave me emotions. Aww. I found myself hating characters that treated him poorly, but I guess there are people like that.
Yes.
Don't listen to our show, people.
It's okay.
Unless you want to send us money.
money fixes everything.
Go right ahead. My number two, the neighbor. Came and went so fast.
And he did show up.
So, okay, if you're listening and you have seen The Disaster Artist.
Yes!
There is an amazing part.
Hopefully you haven't.
Where, oh, no, do that.
No,
movie.
It's
The Disaster Artist. The Room, maybe not.
The Room is funny in a different level. But
The Disaster Artist is the only movie that in my memory that I can say I want to go back in theaters and watch it.
Mm-hmm.
It's so funny because like you get these accounts from the people that were in the movie, and I'm assuming that they like communicated with these people. And there's a woman in the movie that is talking, and she says, "Yep, I went to the doctors, and it's confirmed I definitely have cancer."
And that's her line. And they talk to the actress outside of the scene. She's like, I don't understand why that was in the movie. We never address it again. I don't appear on screen. It had nothing to do with the movie in itself. But like they're like, it was just something that Tommy Wiseau put in the movie for no reason because he knew it would be dramatic. He's like, oh yeah, cancer's dramatic. But it had no ties to the movie. And now, like, the entire movie, I loved the neighbor. I'm like, man, I hope she comes out in court and just like cold cocks the judge and the judge and the other lawyer. And
oh, hi, Mark.
Yeah. She comes out and she's like, yes, I've met with Sam. He's a great father. And they're like, yes, but your father was bad. And she cries and she's never seen again. It's almost as if she didn't matter at all.
It was like the lawyer was playing whack-a-mole. Gotcha.
Yeah. Yep. And it made me so upset because like she was one of my favorite characters. In that I was waiting for her to just be this massive part. And it turns out that I got emotionally invested for no reason. My number one, just for in my personal opinion, more so before the podcast than now, there were just inconsistencies in Penn's character that were just like where he was just totally oblivious. And then he was like super intentional and able to like read between the lines. And maybe I'm just like more associating him with a couple kids that I know that I'm close to. I'm like, no, he never would have done that. Like, he would have caught this. Or if he caught this, he never would have gotten that. Or, like, the times where they make him seem just, like, totally just dizzy and, like, I don't know what's going on. I'm like, no, you would have caught it. You would have been able to hold it together through this court case. But everybody's different. But there were, like, that was the part of the movie where over and over again, I'm like, no, Sean, you wouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
But in my... like, maybe I was watching him like, that's not Sam, it's blank. That's not him, it is this student or this kid that I worked with 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So that's a number one with an asterisk, but that I have to say that's my number one thing of the movie that, like, really just, like, dug in me.
It's your Barry Bonds.
I get that because you're like, no person with autism would be able to do all of this.
But, and they on their own.
They kind of, like, picked and choose, like, okay, this... and you can get that because somebody like Penn, if he's watching them for 3 months or 3 weeks, would be like, oh, I really like that. I really like that. And would have created his own thing, not realizing that's not actually how it works.
But on the flip side, like, I wanted to see Sam as the very, like, high-functioning, capable. And then there were times where he, like, he would just get, like, overly stimulated. And he would just, like, giggle and totally miss something. Like, no, dude, you were just checked in, like, 5 minutes ago. If you're checked in, you're staying checked in until you get the result that you want.
Yeah.
You're not going to start chasing butterflies. And so, like, there was, like, parts where I was like, no.
Squirrel!
You made him
That would have been a different character. Yeah.
There were moments where I was like, no, that was too simple. Sam wouldn't have done that. But kudos to the movie. I bought into who Sam was, and I had a thought of who I wanted him to be. So... one-ish.
You're still just mad at the movie for making you feel.
Yeah, more so, but like, and the neighbor just like not showing up. Like, what the
f***? There it is. It wasn't me.
108.50. Write that down to make my life easier.
Joe?
108.50.
Don't make that too loud. Looking out for you, listeners in the car.
My number three, the scene where Michelle Pfeiffer calls up the psychologist for her son's overdose. I thought this was distasteful and doesn't help her case at all, actually.
But that's also when we still don't really like Rita.
Well, the number two, the personal attacks between the lawyers in court are completely out of place from what would be allowed in a courtroom.
Yeah, Kelso's very much like, I'll allow it.
Hey, Bobby.
Whatever. I'm getting
What
paid.
Do you want, Dr. Cox? my number one, and I'm going to try not to get emotional here, the absent mother. Her attitude at the beginning makes me sick. As someone who would love to have children, to walk away from someone like that pisses me off on a level that I can't even reach and on the broadcast. I watched that, and I had to stop the movie and just take a breath because I was just like, you know how lucky it is to be able to have someone to share that life with, let alone make a life, and you just throw it away callously?
Yeah.
Oh, God. It sucks. So my number one's the absent mother because, I don't know, it's that just bugs the shit out of me. JC, what's yours?
that at no point does anyone in the court, this is my number three, that at no point does anyone in the courtroom attempt to understand autism. At no point do they try to see things from Sam's perspective.
That's a really good point.
Do they actually name it autism at all?
No, they never do. I'm naming it because that's what it is.
Like, Rita should have brought in an expert.
Exactly. at no point does anybody try to help Sam in terms of getting his point across. They literally throughout every courtroom scene only treat him as quote unquote normal.
Yeah.
And that pisses me off because please tell me that's not how it actually was. Like, please tell me that's not how it actually was in courtrooms.
But I'm sure it was at one point.
But that's the thing. At one point it was because people didn't know much about autism and all that stuff. But it's just like, wow, that's depressing.
I'm looking at your number two. I'm curious how you're going to get this one.
There was a moment, and every time I watch it, I keep wondering. The whole scene where, I'm sorry, there seems and appears to be sexual tension between Rita and Sam, specifically whenever, like, she's finally starting to understand.
Are you saying, like, when he says, you need to leave your husband?
Yes. And all of that stuff.
Yes. I watched that one again last night.
If the director is meant it as sexual tension, that bugs me.
Yeah.
That seems way out of place.
Yeah.
But I have a caveat, just like Joel said with his number one, it's the number one-ish. This is a number two-ish, because if the directors were just trying to show it as platonic love, because nothing they said was sexual, it may have just been me reading too much into body language and how the actors played it. And weren't Pfeiffer and Penn, like, together at one point?
I'm on it.
Madonna and Penn were.
No, it wasn't Pfeiffer. I was thinking of Madonna. But anyway, so, like, that may have been it. So they may have just been showing a platonic love. And I'm totally okay with that. But then also at the end of the movie, I'm like, so wait, are Rita and Sean an item, or Rita and Penn an item, or Sam an item now? I don't know. If they are an item, again, I don't want to say that's bad, but I'm also like, ooh, is she now taking advantage of him? But is she taking an advantage when if he loves her, that's equal? So I don't know.
Like the love you make is equal to the love you take.
Whoa. Exactly.
That's the Beatles lyric.
Breaking news as far as January 28th of 2002, Michelle Pfeiffer slams the I Am Sam producers for cutting a love scene between her and Sean Penn's character. The beautiful actress confirmed reports that the sex scene between their characters, Rita Harrison and Sam Dawson, had been left on the cutting room floor.
Thank God.
So it was sexual tension.
Yuck. That ruins the whole movie.
That
would have put this in the Razzies then.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would have ruined it.
That saves it three whole letter grades.
Wow.
I didn't know that.
Boy, did they dodge a bullet.
Wowzers.
And again, like, I kind of see where she's coming from, because then it says, what, they can't love each other? And maybe they do. So, like, I'm okay with them being friends, but it was too fast.
Yeah.
In the movie, it's way too fast for her to go from hating him to loving him. That just felt a little too fast. If they did a little disclaimer that said, like, 5 years down the road, and then you realize, like, Rita and Sam were living together and they had a relationship, I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I'm 100% okay with that.
I will read this to save Pfeiffer's opinions and also to, like, maybe change the picture of what the movie could have been. Her quote says, quote, there is a very intimate scene in the script where we – oh, no, it says it right there, where we make love. Never mind. Oops. Those are the three words I didn't read of this. I really, like, read the rest of this. Anyways.
Well, the three most important went right over your head.
right up the nose. It says there's a very intimate scene in the script where we make love and we filmed a montage thing that isn't in the movie, she says. It was one of those things that I would have liked to have left in. I think producers got afraid of it. Oddly enough, it was the men who had a bigger problem with it than the women. I will say it was probably
right
that. That is Pfeiffer calling to say, let me tell you, I filmed it. And now it might have been tasteful, but I want to say the producers made the right choice.
Yeah, I would say so too.
Although, who wouldn't want to see a love scene with Michelle Pfeiffer? Let's just be honest.
Yeah, well, you're not wrong. You're not wrong.
All right, and then my number one. My number one thing is the lawyer, the Tom Schiff's lawyer, the mom, and the DCS lady. they were the villains, and I get that the movie made them the villains, but because they were the villains, I hate their f-ing guts.
This is the...
And 1:15:27.
This is like the... Professor Umbridge or the Umbridge that we've talked about. Yeah,
like these Umbridge characters were clearly made to be hated, and they did a good job. Yeah,
isn't that the phrase we've used in the past? The Umbridge, they're like, they're so bad you like legitimately hate them. So it's like, well, that was a good job.
I think I don't remember using it, but we'll use it now.
There's somebody we've talked about before. I'm like, they're the Umbridges. Such a bad person.
They're the Umbridges. Yes. Umbridges.
Yep.
Umbridges
of Madison County.
The bridge.
All right. Who is the audience for this movie, Monsieur Joel?
You didn't give your number one.
Yeah,
I did.
The mom, the lawyer.
The mom, the lawyer, okay. The DC.
I must have tuned out. Okay.
No, I'm going to say this is actually – usually I don't – like it's always a genuine answer, but it's always – I always feel canned when I say it. I'm like, this is for kids. This is for football fans. This is for people who like aliens.
I Am Sam is definitely for people who like aliens.
I Am Sam is for football fans. I'm going to say millennials. I think that I don't think that people from the age of 16 or maybe like even 14 at this point, I think it's like 14 to 34. There is such like a blanket over our eyes. I've talked to like my dad about it. I've talked to a bunch of people. If you look at my dad, his dad worked hard because his family had nothing.
Yeah.
And so my dad worked hard so that they – or what was it? My dad's grandfather worked hard because they literally had nothing. Depression. His dad worked hard so they could have a little bit of something. My dad worked hard so that we wouldn't have to know about that. And so now we're in that generation where we have not physically seen with our eyes, for the most part, people like having to grind tooth and nail for like their like means of like living.
No, you're 100%
and
right.
So like
I had a doctor for a father, so people could say, like, well, you had a silver spoon. Like, I don't think I did, because I like to think he taught me a hard work ethic and all that fun stuff. But, no, I 100% agree with you.
I mean, like, I remember my dad telling stories of, like, they went to the grocery store, and they came home. He had three other brothers, and they said, this is the food that we have for 2 weeks. And that was what they had. And so, my mom and my dad have both told me, like, we saw things that our parents did that built us to who we are today. We don't want you to have to learn that way. We want you to learn like by us telling you stories and for us to like raise you right to where like you don't have to like want, you know? And so we're in this huge generation of people that like, and I consider myself very like fortunate and thankful to be able to have the like foresight to see that. But there's so many people my age that have no idea that there are people that have mental challenges as adults.
No, millennials should watch this.
And
I agree.
Like, I was lucky as a kid to work with them, to work with children that had differences. And even in college, we had to have service hours. And the whatever that I drew was an adult day center. And so I worked with people that were in their 60s and 70s that had differences. And so it's like, people, the average person is not going to get that experience. I consider myself extremely fortunate to have had that experience. I think that there's a massive generational gap that needs to watch a movie like this. That's not a radio, that isn't a, look, the football team succeeded, and now the kids and the one kid that has a difference gets along, and they're not stuffing them in a locker anymore.
Yeah.
Like, it needs to be more than that, and this is a movie that makes you think, like, hard, and that's longer than I think any of my audience, like, recommendations has ever been.
Well,
but I think the millennials, they're ruining everything. Joe?
Parents. JC? parents and those who wish they were parents.
Yeah, I agree. And it's funny because I kind of went at it the exact opposite way of Joel. Joel was saying, like, the people that don't understand mental illness need to see this to understand mental illness. And I wrote, this is what I wrote, those who understand autism and parents. Like, I feel like the only people that will appreciate this is those that understand autism and people that want to be parents, which would be the opposite of Joel. Like, I'm saying people should only watch this movie if they're going to appreciate it. And I almost have to check myself because that's my own, like, I'm already creating too narrow of a viewpoint. So I want to, like, people need to watch this that know nothing about mental illness. If you have never seen somebody with autism, if you've never seen somebody with Asperger's, if you've never watched Big Bang Theory, if you don't already have a preconceived notion of it, you need to watch this movie because Big Bang Theory is funny. This is real. Like, this will hit you in the feels because it's honest. And so if you don't understand mental illness, you should watch this. You really should. And I'm not even saying, like, if you want to. It's a 100%. You should watch this.
All right.
All right. Movie report card time. A, B, C, D, E, or F. No, just kidding. There's no E.
And let's be clear, a C is
so happy to have you back, JC.
Let's be clear here. A C means average. It doesn't mean like we're in a day and age where every parent wants their kid to get an A because they think that's what everybody else is doing. C is average, guys. So there we go.
But they altered the grading scale and then it's all
true. That was a very teacher like
that was very teacher.
Everybody is average.
Clearly somebody's just going back to the classroom recently.
I had a college professor that said that to us and we hated her. We're like, not when it interferes with our scholarships.
All right, so movie report card A, B, C, D, or F in the drama feature film genre. Give us a grade and some comments that defend your grade, Joel.
I think this is the first movie in a long time where, like, throughout the last couple of days, I was like, am I going to give it this? Am I going to give it this? Am I going to give it this? Because, like, one, you know, like you're considering like this obviously is important to somebody. This is important to a bunch of people. And I'm not one to be like, this sucked. F for everyone.
That's my role.
But today I was like bouncing back and forth. And even during the podcast, I was like, you know, this, I think as far as I can remember, I want to say like, this might be the definition of a B movie in my opinion. Cause like it is like the definition of above average. It is better than your average movie. When you say I Am Sam, it's not like you're saying, have you seen Anchorman? Have you seen The Benchwarmers? You know, like, have you seen Rush Hour 2?
Robert Taylor.
Yeah, like, it's so much better. Like, even like a Wedding Crash. Like, everyone loves Wedding Crashes. Everyone's seen it, but it's a movie that everybody has seen. It's not a movie that everybody needs to see. It is a funny movie that everyone has seen. Mm-hmm. And this is... this is a step above that. I can't give it an A because, like, there are the things we talked about. That, like, I don't think Penn's character was perfectly accurate in this. And there were so many points in the movie where I'm like, they would have solved this before. Like, they would have already solved this. They would have set him up with somebody. Why is this something we're worrying about now? But going back to what I said on my very first podcast, this is a great movie that was made to entertain, to make you think, and that go way beyond what the average movie does. It entertained, which is exactly what movies are supposed to do. It made you consider stuff that you don't want to consider, that you don't want to have opinions on. There's so many things that we want to look at and say, that's someone else's problem. And I've like people that have learning differences, having a life outside of school, that is 99% a problem. I'm like, please someone else deal with that because I don't want to be the one that has to make these decisions. And so I'm super uncomfortable this entire movie because I feel like I have to like solve all of these problems.
Because we do it every day.
Yeah, because
8 hours a day, 12 hours a day.
But like I have to give it a B. This is an incredibly good above average movie. There are holes that you can't defend. But when if people came at me and said like, well, what about this? I'm like, who cares? It's a movie.
Yeah.
And I think the B slot is saved for this is a very good movie and I don't have to defend why I liked it.
Yeah. I get that.
Yeah. What about you, Joe?
Well, JC, you got me in the feels with this one. Thanks a lot for that.
I was just trying to cup them, man. Just cup them.
Don't spit on your computer, man.
I'm not. Don't worry.
But it's definitely why I'm going to give it its due later in the fan rating. Things this movie did well. Acting-wise, Penn, Pfeiffer, and Fanning, they're phenomenal. The direction of this film is really good, too. I especially love the editing. They did a great job with using different perspectives and quick edits to show Sam's confusion at certain points. But let's be honest, this movie is a acting clinic by Sean Penn. You watch this movie for Sean Penn. Nobody has played a character with special needs to this degree, with this much class and deference, since Dustin Hoffman did it with Rain Man. Penn is amazing, and I feel like this is him at his most powerful as an actor. In fact, I will reiterate what I said earlier. If this movie had come out the next year, he would have won for Best Actor. Ironically, he won for Best Actor the next year for his role in Mystic River.
Yeah.
But the playing, playing Sam is the more memorable performance by him. That being said, the story itself is kind of where this movie loses steam a little bit. First, simplified, this is a movie about a mentally challenged man who is trying to keep custody of his daughter despite the fact he cannot really take care of her on his own. Although this movie does a great job of tugging at the heartstrings, and those are very authentic moments, there are things that don't make a lot of sense. How is he able to afford a home, pay bills, and feed his daughter on an $8 an hour salary at Starbucks? Is he getting financial help or support from his parents or the state? Who was the mother, and what was their relationship like the 9 months that they must have been together? How is it that nobody noticed that Sam was the sole caregiver of Lucy until she was a few years in school? Why wasn't Lucy's language development stunted? Was it because of the neighbor? I have tons of questions that could give this movie more life that I wish were answered because I want more of the movie through this narrative, but the movie opts for giving us more moments of Lucy and Sam to get us in the feels than explain what could sway the audience away from being on Sam's side, which I think is a very smart move. They had to toe the line on this. Although we all want Sam to end up with Lucy, in our heart of hearts, we know that Laura Dern is the best option for the welfare of the child. I wish the movie ended in a more concise or explanatory way. What is this relationship legally with Dern and her family at this point? We just get a shot of them running around the soccer field and he's got around his. I want to know, what is the resolution? What did they decide to do legally? Some closure here, I think, would have been really good. I'm giving this movie a B. I think it's really above average. It's at times it dragged a little bit in the premise and story. Could have used a little bit of refining to make it a perfect film. But is it on the level of Castaway? I don't think it's there yet, but I think Sean Penn's acting is the best of all the drama movies that we've seen so far. JC, what's yours?
It's interesting because I agree with 100% everything you said, except is it not as good as Castaway? And I don't. I'm kind of surprised looking back that Castaway is only a B+, but I'd have to re-listen to why that wasn't like an A- or something like that. But because I agree with everything, I'm not going to go lower than a B, but I'm not also going to go as high as an A-. In my head, I was kind of like, so you got to knock off for the story problems. You got to knock off for the pacing. It is a long movie, and I still think it's longer than it needs to be. And you said something at the end about closure. I want to know what the wrap-up is. And so if you take those two, three things off, that's A+ to A minus or A to A- to B+. So I'm going B+. It is not an A movie. I 100% agree. It's not an A movie, but I do think it's up there with Castaway. But now that you say that, yeah, Penn's performance was better than Hanks, but Hanks was good too. So there you go.
So if we revisit the list of movies in the drama pantheon, let's see. We got number one is Whiplash with an A-. Number two is Lost in Translation with an A-. Number three is Castaway with a B+. And number four is I Am Sam.
How is Whiplash so high?
It's such a good movie.
No, it's not.
Here's the thing. It could
so good.
The only reason this movie was not an A was because it didn't give you a happy ending.
No, it didn't.
It's the whole that's the only reason.
Such a good movie. I'm making it
okay. 128.
Yes. I love that movie.
but I read back over this. I'm like, how is Whiplash above Castaway? That's such bullshit.
I don't know, man.
It is.
That is the only thing. Maybe I'm like, man, is this the perfect movie?
No.
Maybe it's because J.K. Simmons is so furiously handsome in the whole thing.
I can't believe that Whiplash is higher than those two.
Now the fan rating. The fan rating, who we are as fans.
Never sweat during a movie before until Whiplash.
Let's get our critics' hats off. Do you love this movie, like the movie, or none of the above? Joel?
I'm going to be honest. I like this movie, but I legitimately like love doing this podcast. I enjoyed like talking about this movie more than I liked watching this movie. So I will say I liked it.
All right.
Strong like.
I loved it. I loved it. And I... very thankful JC nominated. There's no way I would have watched this if JC hadn't ever nominated it.
There you go.
Like, this would have never hit my radar in 60 years.
You hear that, Rotten Tomatoes?
Stupid.
Stay at home.
But here's the thing. I love this movie. It may not be perfect, but it was perfect for me.
Loved it. 100% loved it. All I still love it. And I've seen it like 12 times. I still love it.
Mm-hmm. That's all we've got time for today, Movie Planeteers. Next show, Josh will be joining me to talk about Silence of the Lambs for the Drama Pantheon. You can email the Movie Planet using the address movieplanetpodcast@gmail.com. If you enjoyed the show, subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Overcast, Podbean, Spotify, wherever you want. Give us a 4 or 5 star review. Like us on Facebook and Twitter. Follow the Instagram. The opinions expressed on the Movie Planet podcast are those of the individual hosts. The Movie Planet podcast is not affiliated with, prepared for, approved, or licensed by any entity that created any films discussed or reviewed herein. All movie clips and music included in the podcast are the intellectual property of the respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purpose of review, and no infringement is intended. Thanks for listening, and happy movie watching.